first off, my name is Don Coberly. I'm here doing the session for Elder Hostel. Yesterday, in Jim's poetry session, he rolled a hand grenade out into the middle of the room and said that it would be completely all right with him if you would work on your stories during my session or Cliff's session.
I said, it's your notebook.
As Jim and I got, we got separated and not connected yesterday on the geology hike, and since it had been a year since he'd been on the last geology, he forgot the whole idea of relative age dating and older and younger events. So the fact that this class is a later event than his class, it would be impossible for you to work on your story in my class because my class hadn't happened yet.
Unless it was for tomorrow.
Okay. I've given this talk 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. This is number 8. I've given it 7 times successfully. 3 or 4 of those without you. So, all right.
No.
Heidi, just in case you think you're going to lip off, this is the kind of stuff that's going to happen.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Okay. We've for the Holden Elder Village folks, we've done 3 sessions already on a variety of geologic topics. And on some of those things, I kind of know what I'm talking about, and some of those I flat made up. So, but in this case, we're moving into an area that is what I do both as a profession, and this work, the groundwater work that has been done at this site from 97 up through now, is work that I completed. So if we're going to talk about mine site history, I would send you to see Rick Dunning. If we were going to talk about the geotechnical aspects, I would send you to my friend Rick Longendue. When we're talking about groundwater, I know as much about this as probably anybody does. So that doesn't mean I'm not still going to make things up. But in this case,
you gotta let us know which is the true and which is not.
Oh no.
We'll ask the poet. So I've been working on this project professionally since 1997. And so that means that for probably hundreds of days since 1997, I've been here in the village, or out there on the tailings piles, getting paid, which is nice. And so I've called this the Holden Mine Site Remedial Investigation Feasibility Study a work in progress. And as usual, I try to make a play on words, so it's a work in progress, like we're trying to get somewhere. And the other part is it's a work in progress. It hasn't been finished, as you can very easily see. So, what I want to talk about tonight is to do an introduction, talk about the mine site itself, talk about early environmental investigation and remediation history, talk about the current framework of environmental studies. Those are related to the Superfund process, so I want to talk about that quickly. Talk about remedial investigation work completed, give you a basic conceptual model of geology and groundwater flow in particular at the site, and then talk about key findings. After Vespers tonight, Paul Haynes, the public works director here in the village, will give another presentation that will talk about sort of from here forward as to how what most likely will happen will impact the village. So I see myself as giving the history from 1937 or 1938 to about now, and then Paul picking up from about now moving forward. Disclaimer, make 2 points here. One, while I am here, the work that I have done here has all been paid for by the mining company. I strive to be objective. I have responsibilities to a professional license to, when I'm doing evaluations about the mine site, I can't make anything up, so I don't. But I come from a perspective, and you need to know that. I'm not, widely known in literature, completely unbiased observer? I have an agenda. But it seems to me that if I am trying to be aware that I have an agenda, then I'm less likely to have that be manifested in some way that we can't tell. The second disclaimer point is, since I'm up here under these auspices, I'm not acting as a professional representative of Rio Tinto Mining at the moment. So that's the way I can get away with saying anything really stupid that I say. Well, yeah, Michael is recording this, so. Okay. This is a slide that I created 8 or 10 years ago. Summarized 12 years now, perhaps 80,000 hours of work into 60 minutes. That's not all by me. That's by dozens, if perhaps around 100 people, into 60 minutes so that you can add to your understanding of the site history, the ongoing process of investigation, and if you wish, be an informed participant on the future decisions affecting Holden Village and the local environment. I'm going to leave it at that for now, and we can talk more about it later. Here, in case you're unclear as to where in the world we are and what the map looks like, we're up Lake Chelan, and the one thing that you can see on here that we talked about 2 days ago, over on the north side of the creek, about a little bit shy of Lucerne, you can see where Prince Creek is, which is from Chelan to Prince Creek is where the power line ran, came across the lake at Prince Creek, ran up this side of the lake from there behind Domke Lake and then up the valley. This is a map of where we are in the Railroad Creek drainage. Everything within that dark black line, any precipitation that falls inside that line comes down into the drainage of Railroad Creek. Railroad Creek is the drain for this valley. So we're halfway up the valley from the headwaters down to the lake. This is a map of the mine site itself and the remediation, or the mine site itself, Holden Village in the little triangle at the top. In the business side of things, think of there as being three tailings piles. Tailings pile one is the short one right across the creek from us. You know that in the middle there's a much taller tailings pile. We call that tailings pile two, and then down towards the far end of the site is what we call tailings pile three. Holden Village is in the little triangle up at the top. The two gray shaded areas kind of in the middle of the picture are what we call the east and west waste rock piles. The east waste rock pile to the east and the west waste rock pile to the west. We can put a lot of thought into that. Waste rock is the material that as they were initially tunneling in, they felt was not worth the effort of running through the mill. So the two big piles that we see as you're walking down the road, the two piles that look like big pieces of rock, that's waste rock. In between them, what we see right now is the skeleton of the mill building. That's where the mill building was in the mining phase. Here's an aerial photo. That's the village right there. Me. No, wait, I'm on the other side of me. Cliff? Tailings pile one, tailings pile two, tailings pile three. the Forest Service, I'll talk about in a little bit, but these are test vegetation plots that they did after they recovered the tailings piles. Here's the two waste rock piles.
What year was this picture?
I'm going to, wait a minute. July 2000, mid. One thing that you might notice that's a little subtle here until I point it out is this is Railroad Creek. Comes in white, leaves orange. Right about here is where we start to see the orange come in. When we go on the hike tomorrow, that will be a point that we will look at a little more closely. I will be glad to entertain questions in the flow. If it's something that I'm going to talk about a little while, I'll tell you I'm going to talk about it a little while. If it's something we're going to talk about on the hike, I'll defer it to then. If it's something I can't avoid any other way, I'll fake a seizure.
The tailings were also called Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
And so, yes, that's one point that's important, is that depending on who you're talking to, the tailings piles get called different things. So at one point during Holden Village history, the three tailings piles were called
Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Say again.
Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego.
Okay. The ore body was discovered by J.H. Holden in 1896. You already know that because we talked about it 2 days ago. Mining by Howe Sound took place in 1938 to 1957. You know what the primary metals of economic interest were. There are 60 miles of underground mine workings. There are 8 million tons of tailings placed in three tailings piles covering approximately 65 acres. About 1.5 million tons, from what I recall, was put back into the mine in the later mining days. They thought that that might be a good place to store some of the tailings, and that seems all right. And as part of the fix-it process, the feasibility study process, we evaluated putting all of the tailings back into the mine. And we can talk more about that when it comes up. Cyanide was used sparingly. Arsenic was not used in the mining process at the Holden mine site. At various times in the past, certain people on the Lady of the Lake or the Forest Service personnel have been misinformed that arsenic was used. That's not the case. Cyanide was used sparingly. Cyanide that was used in 1938 to 1957 is of no environmental concern at the moment. It is not persistent in the environment. Basic mining processes. 2,000 tons a day came out of the mountain, was processed down to 200 tons a day of concentrate. The tailings were sent out to the tailings piles through as a slurry through wood stave pipe. The pipe in those days was 6 or 8 thin boards that were wrapped up in wire. The concentrate was moved by truck to Lucerne, by barge to Chelan, by truck to the railhead at Chelan Falls, and then by rail to Tacoma for smelting. These are those two waste rock piles. East waste rock pile to the east. The skeleton of the mill building in the middle. This is on top of what we call tailings pile number one. At that same level, those of you who were in writing class on Monday, this is the trivial story about my young friend Jack, along with the police officer from the South Carolina State Police. It's not a big deal story, so you that don't know about it, it's no thing. So, okay, slideshow. All right, what have we learned so far? Don't try to go backwards. Okay. At the level of the tops of those two tailings piles is where the main portal came out, where the miners went in and out. That is what Holden Village calls the third level. When when mining took place, as the later days of the mine, they continued to mine further down to the point where at the bottom they were mining below Railroad Creek level. So there were huge pumps that were put in the bottom of the mine. The pump water out, they pulled the plug in 1957, the pump stopped pumping, the water started to fill up, the mine came out in the mid-60s at some point, and soon after that collapsed the main portal. So when we got here in when I got here in 1997, there was water coming out of this sort of avalanche out of some timbers up there. We decided in 1999 that we needed to reestablish the main portal, so we had some hard rock miners come in from Idaho and do that job, and these are a few photos of that. This is inside the portal, about 100 feet. We have a series of two bulkheads that we built in there. This one closest to the front has a V-notch weir in it so that we can measure how much water is flowing out. There's a 4-foot pond of water behind that. When it's safe, you can take a boat, if you know the right people, and go in. The portal itself, the floor rises about half a degree, so that if you go in about 1,500 feet, you're on dry ground. That's equipment right there at the portal that we have. That's me getting paid. This is inside the mine. After we reestablished the main portal, two large groups went into the mine to see what the conditions were and to do some geologic and hydrologic studies. Here's one of the miners, one of the, might be a Forest Service dude at the main shaft. This is the old, one of the old warehouses inside. Back in the mine. Come back out the main portal and look east. Mill building, tailings pile 1, tailings pile 2. You can't see tailings pile 3 because it's hidden. Where we were on the hike yesterday might be right about here, looking across the valley. Mill building skeleton. That's a picture I took while I was working, getting paid. I don't know that there's anything of mine interest in here. One thing that we can see very easily, classical U-shaped for a glacially carved valley. Holden Lake is up in this valley right here, another U-shaped valley where a feeder glacier came into the main glacier that carved the Railroad Creek Valley that fed into a glacier that carved Lake Chelan that fed into a glacier that helped carve the Columbia.
The falls
from Heart Lake. Is that that? Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Sunshine, clouds. In the springtime, there is a pond or a lagoon that forms just to the west of the vehicle road. The greenish tinge in there comes from copper in the water. If you go down there now, I assume that's dry. I haven't been over there lately, but I expect that to be the case. For a little bit of mine, I don't know, it's not history, but this is the way the world is here at Holden. Or at the mine, the zero level is where the ore body intercepts the surface. Level identification is number of vertical feet down from zero. Bigger numbers mean lower levels. The main portal is 1,500, or what the village calls third level. Lowest level is 2,675 below Railroad Creek level. So you can stand on the road, look up to the third level, try to imagine 1,200 feet lower than that, and now we're down below the creek. This is a photo of a series of those portals that or tunnels that go into those various levels. The zero level would be up probably right about the left edge of the picture, but 350, 500, 700, 850 or something like that are those portals. early environmental investigation and remediation history. The first thing I added to this in the bright green, initial comments read pre-mining and mining days. Howe Sound bought the mine in 1930, which you all remember because we talked about it on Tuesday. And from 28. From 28 to 31, they tried to do some mining. They were firing it up, ready to go. And then another sort of wavelet in the Depression hit, and so they decided to stop. During that time period, it became known to they were working with the regulatory agencies to get the mine permitted, and there were some problems that were put on hold because the mine was put on hold. And then in 1934, the mining company commissioned a study to be done by a couple of highly respected mine engineers here in the Northwest. And they came up with a list of suggestions that they felt would keep Railroad Creek clean. That has, even from 1934, that has been the issue, or from before the mine started, that was clear that that was going to be the crux of the deal, including some fairly advanced tests at the time for seeing how the local fish would do in various concentrations of water that had been impacted by the mine. So, during the mining days, this was felt to be a well-run mine and more towards the cutting edge of environmental concerns than kind of at the other end of the spectrum. I've already told you about that, the mine being pumped and then overflowing. In 1967, here's my abbreviations. GW is groundwater. SW is surface water. So iron, copper, zinc, and manganese levels were elevated in RR, stands for Railroad Creek. An absence of fish was noted. Aquatic insect fauna downstream of the tailings piles was either absent or greatly diminished. 1973, there were attempts to reseed tailings pile 1, kind of just on the tailings itself. Those didn't work out so well. There was an air study. Anybody who has visited Holden, anybody visit Holden before they capped the tailings piles? Okay. And what happened in the afternoons? Wind blew and there was a great orange cloud of the dry, rusty, sandy, silty stuff on top of the tailings piles. Studies have been going on here for quite some time of a variety of different topics. I used to have a whole another slide that summarized those 75 to 89 studies. They're not that important except to sort of browbeat you into thinking that there have been a lot of studies done here. From 89 to 91, the Pacific Northwest Laboratories developed and implemented reclamation elements. They were a subcontractor to the Forest Service. They built a diversion trench around TPs, our tailings piles, put big rock at the base of the tailings piles so that the tailings piles wouldn't erode into Railroad Creek, and graveled the top of the tailings piles. From 1990 through 1996, a number of additional studies were done, including the U.S. Geological Survey, a guy named Jim Kilburn, who has published a couple of professional papers you can find online. Just go to the USGS website and type in Kilburn and PP for professional paper, and you can find those. Dames and Moore, engaged by the mining company to complete environmental study. I was working with Dames and Moore at the time, and so my first day here was May 17th, 1997. There is no other site that I've worked on in 20 years that I can tell you the first day I spent on site. But there is no other site that I've worked on where you drive to Chelan, to Fields Point, get on the boat and come up lake and they get you in school bus. So, okay, regulatory framework. The Holden mine site is not a Superfund site. That's another misapprehension that they sometimes say on the boat. It's not a Superfund site. Regulatory agencies, federal, the Forest Service is the primary agency, for what? Organizing and negotiating the cleanup. The United States EPA is involved. The state Washington Department of Ecology, which is the state EPA, they agreed with Intalco, who was the successor to Howe Sound, to study the Holden mine site under the Superfund law and the state of Washington Model Toxics Control Act. So to be named, to be listed as a Superfund site, a site has to go through a process and is given a score and then is put on the list. And this was that process took place in the early 70s mostly. And part of that Superfund listing was, imagine this as a political process, every state got at least two Superfund sites. So if you think perhaps the most polluted place in, pick a state, Hawaii, might not be as polluted as the about 787th polluted place in New Jersey. That didn't matter. Or to a degree it did, but every state needed to have two Superfund sites. But the Superfund process is a structured process. The whole idea was that there is this set of laws, rules, mores, folkways in place that other people have used, so let's use it rather than reinventing the wheel. And so the process has the following components: an administrative order on consent, which is thou shalt do the following. The remedial investigation. In the remedial investigation, you figure out what the problems are. Once you've figured out what the problems are, you do what's called a feasibility study, which is how can we fix the problems. Part of that feasibility study is it technically feasible? What does it cost? Are there political ramifications? And then there's sort of a matrix that's put together, and hopefully out of that is something that bubbles up as being the best solution. Record of decision, this is a legally binding document that says the mining company will do the following things. They will have them done by the certain date. If they don't, there are certain penalties. After it's put in place, there will be monitoring. If the monitoring shows certain things, then maybe some of the elements can be removed. If the monitoring shows that more needs to be done, perhaps more needs to be done. And then remedial activities are actually building something, fixing something, doing something to help clean up the site. Any questions to this point? Man, this is the best I've ever explained this. Scheduled a date, I only have these in here because the first time I did this in 2002, this stuff had some vague resemblance to reality, and now it's so far blown up that it's not even funny. Don't bother about any of this because it's all not true. Remedial action construction will begin spring 2012. When you come back tonight after Vespers, that's what Paul Haynes will tell you. Remedial investigation work completed. We've had lots of people up here with lots of different technical expertise doing lots of different things. Groundwater work, yep, did that. This is me, okay? Groundwater work, did that. Surface water work, did that. Soils, did that. Fish, did that. Geophysical survey, stood back while some guys blew up some dynamite. Sediment sampling and analysis, not here, but other places. Dye tracer testing, did that. That's the first time I saw a Barrett site. Baseline risk assessment, nope, can't do that. Mine geology and hydrology survey, after reopening mining portal. You'd think they'd take the site hydrogeologist in, but no, they didn't have room for him on the team. Not that I'm a little upset about that. Bat survey, nope, can't do that. Additional well lysimeter installation in November 2001, I did that. additional well installation, October 2000. I did that. Massive additional geotechnical and hydrogeologic field studies, both last summer and this spring. I was part of that, but it was so big I couldn't do it all.
So is the bat survey well flying bat?
Yes, because some people on the other side of the table, we can go back and revisit that disclaimer if you want. Some people on the other side of the table felt that the mine itself served as where is it that bats live? Bats live in a batatorium. That's honest to goodness truth. That's the technical term for it. So we did some investigations, two things in particular, one of which I can remember, which is we had motion sensors set up in some of the openings to see if anything would go by. There are no bats here. Okay. That's my friend Karen Mixon. This is a groundwater monitoring well right here. We're pumping water out and we're sending it to the lab to test it. This would have been a November event, I expect. That's another friend of mine, Jamie Schick, back in 1997, sampling the water at the base of the tall tailings pile. Tailings pile 2. There is water that seeps out from the base of that, and it's fairly heavily impacted. That's me working, getting paid at Holden. In this case, I am measuring how much water is flowing down Railroad Creek. On that rod, I have a thing that's like an anemometer, so that the faster the water is going, the faster the cups spin. And that rod is essentially a yardstick, and so you can measure how high the water is, you can measure how wide the creek is, you can measure how fast it's going, you multiply all those together, and you get how much water's flowing down the stream. In this case, I'm sampling the water. There's a little bottle on the end that's got a valve that points upstream that you catch water in. That's a number of us sampling the stream for fish. That's me in the back. This is October of 1997. Work of this type is apparently going to take place yet this fall. Since I fell in the water three times in 1997 and nobody else on the team fell in at all, I haven't been invited onto that team this year. Plus, I'm not a fisheries biologist, but I wasn't then either. In this case, we use electrical current to stun the fish, catch them in nets, put them in a bucket, weigh them, measure them, count how many they are. 5% of them get blended, and then we check their livers and their internal organs to see how much cadmium, copper, and zinc is in them. That's me getting paid. There's some other guys in the mine. This is the 2001 event. That's the small drilling rig on tracks right there. That's the air compressor. These are the foam blocks, that some of which still are here at Holden Village. Made a foam hench earlier this spring.
Don?
Yes?
I have a question about the fish that you tested for what did you find?
Yes. I can't tell you. My guess would be that those levels were raised in the fish. They were higher in the fish here. The way that we did that survey was we had two different sections, two different places that we did sampling up above the ball field that we think of as being sort of background for this area. We did another survey right here, right in the creek, right about here. Did another one downstream across from tailings pile 2. Another one about 3 miles down. And then we horse-packed out of Stehekin to go do the same thing. When I get to the results, I will tell you some other things about the fish. I don't know what the fish tissue cadmium differential was between above the site and at the site. I'm a groundwater guy, not a fisheries biologist. This is the drill rig on the other side of the creek. This is down below Sven's Bridge, and the creek is hidden here, so we scooted across the creek and then into a wetland, or that's all alder thicket right there. Same drill rig a few days later, back on this side of the creek, drilling. Up on top of the tailings pile, this was in November of 2001, so it was snowing. Had snowed the night before. That's me, working, getting paid. You might think that what I'm doing is putting water down a hole. What I'm really doing is a scientific test by putting water down a hole. But I got grad school, so. And I really should be wearing a hard hat in that photo. That's a little bit unfortunate. But. Okay. We do all these studies. We do all this testing. We sit around after work and brainstorm about what in the world's going on here. And this is after, whatever, 12 years and $8 million. This is the best we got. The site is located in a glacially carved U-shaped valley. That cost about $1.5 million right there. I need to talk to Michael as soon as I'm done here. And if Rio Tinto finds out anything about this. The valley bottom and the lower sidewalls are covered with soil and sediments of glacial origin, some reworked by Railroad Creek. My friend Rick, that works on this project, says, think of this as a bathtub full of marbles. My variation on this is it's a half-round pipe full of marbles, so that the bedrock on the two sides and the bottom of the valley is relatively impermeable. Water doesn't leak out of the bathtub or the sides of the bathtub. In the bathtub itself are the sediments, mostly glacial in origin, that in some places have been reworked by Railroad Creek. When a creek reworks material, it usually makes it more permeable. That's the thing I think about from my world. It sorts it out into like grain sizes in different places, which makes the material very porous. All site surface water and groundwater is ultimately discharged to Railroad Creek. All site surface water and groundwater is ultimately discharged to Railroad Creek. Railroad Creek is the bottom of the valley. Stuff flows downhill, and that's where it shows up. Goes from into Railroad Creek, down to Lake Chelan. Remedial investigation key findings. Site conditions. There are two distinct groundwater chemistries at the site. From the footbridge going uphill, going upstream, it's zinc and copper water from the portal in the mill area. From the footbridge about downstream, it's iron from beneath the tailings piles. Spring runoff conditions are different than conditions for the remainder of the year. Volume and chemistry both. What happens here in the spring? The creek comes up, snow melts, provides water. There's a big gush of water that comes down the stream in the spring. I haven't looked at the creek since I've been here, but if you compare high water to low water, it's 15 times as high in the spring as it is in the winter. Water level or flow in the stream is going down right now, will continue to go down, and by about September through the winter, it's usually fairly consistent. The chemistry changes in the spring, and I think we'll show something about it. Here is a hydrograph. The upper scale is how much water is flowing down the stream. This is based on stuff like when I was in the stream taking the discharge measurement. So through the winter, the flow in this case is 80 CFS is a cubic foot per second. That's not a big deal. This is all comparative. It's all the same number on the graph. So at some point, we're below 80. Here's the first hint of spring. this is the water that is somewhere here down at the bottom of the valley that melts off first. And so flow goes up to, in this year, what year was this? 2001. Went up to 300 CFS, dropped back down as weather got cool again, or all of this low snow melted off. Now we get to, I don't know, Memorial Day-ish time. It heats up. Now we start melting off water from high up in the valley. The flow goes up to almost 700 CFS. These would be summertime rainstorms. And then the rain stops and water levels and flows continue to go down until November 13, which is the day we got here and it started raining like heck. So it was cold and rainy for those first few days we were here, and that wasn't very fun. The reason that the water chemistry changes, particularly in the spring, is this is a cross-section of the mine itself. The black stuff, the light gray stuff is all the holes in the hill. The black stuff are the parts of the holes in the hill that have been filled in by tailings. What happens is in the springtime you get a big gush of water that comes through the mine from snowmelt on top of the mine. It infiltrates, it washes the walls off and sends all that water out the 1500 level portal right there. And then for the remaining 12 or 10 of the 12 months after that, the walls of the mine essentially rust. They oxidize because there is air flowing through the mine all the time. There is water vapor in that. What's the word I'm thinking of?
Condensation.
We'll go with that for right now. Humidity. Good golly. There's humidity in that air. The walls essentially rust. You get salts on the wall the same way that you get orange stuff on a nail. And then the next spring, the same darn thing happens. And those salts are very soluble. They get washed off so that in the springtime, there's about a two-week period of time where there's both a lot of water that comes out of the mine and it's very much impacted. The problem with that, or it would be convenient if for 2 weeks out of the year we could get the fish to live on the bank and then go back in the creek. That's doesn't happen. Okay, remedial investigation key findings. Potential environmental concerns. Seasonal exceedances of water quality criteria occur in groundwater at the site. There's the list of things. Groundwater is not an issue. There is one part of groundwater at this site which is an issue. There is no concern about drinking groundwater here because nobody does. There is no concern about people drinking groundwater in the future because there's not going to be Holden Village condo estates right down the valley. That's not ever going to happen. So groundwater as a drinking water source here is not an issue. The problem with the groundwater is it discharges into the creek water. Now we talk about surface water. Seasonal exceedances of water quality criteria occur in surface water. Here's the thing we just talked about. Discharge leads to exceedances of water criteria, exceedances of water quality criteria at the site for cadmium, copper, lead, and zinc during spring runoff. Metals concentrations decrease. By fall, exceedances are limited to copper in one sample and zinc adjacent to the immediate downstream of the site. This is based on data prior to the last 2 years, so that may have been changed a little bit, but the point still holds. If there is some water quality criteria at some point in the year, it doesn't matter that it doesn't occur in the other parts of the year until we train the fish to live on the bank for a while. Okay, Gay, this is a little bit shading towards the question that you ask. Both benthic invertebrates and fish populations are reduced downstream of the site. The best place to fish is right here behind this building, because once you get past here a little bit, the fish don't like being there, so this is kind of a truck stop right here. Fish populations approximately 3 miles downstream of the site are within the range of populations collected at the reference sites above the site. Benthic invertebrate populations are reduced to the mouth of Railroad Creek. Benthic invertebrates are the bugs that the fish eat. So you go 3 miles downstream. These are reasonable numbers based on my memory of a long time ago. The fish populations sort of per unit length of stream upstream are in 18 to 20 per football field length. Across from the tailings piles, it's one or two. You go downstream 3 miles, and now it's back to 16 or 18, so it's within the statistical noise, and it may be the same number, it may be a little bit lower. The benthic invertebrate population gets reduced by a dramatic amount, 75% to 90%, and doesn't reestablish as you go down.
So they don't die when they go through here. They just don't stay long?
The fish or the bugs?
The fish.
The fish, I have some new information about that as of this spring. No, as of 2 weeks ago. The issue is the orange coating on the rocks, which is from the iron in the tailings piles. Orange coating on the rocks means the algae doesn't grow. The algae not growing means the bugs don't have anything to eat. So the bugs aren't here. The bugs not being here mean the fish don't have anything to eat, so the fish aren't here. The water is not toxic to fish. It's just they don't have anything to eat. So they got this barren stretch here of no food. Plenty of food up there, enough food down there. Nobody spends any time.
So they don't. They don't damage themselves while they're in this space.
To my knowledge, that's correct.
Hungry until they get.
They're looking for food. Okay. So nobody lives here.
Is the water toxic to the bugs?
I do not know that. I don't know.
Because obviously downstream there must be enough for the bugs to eat. And yet you say it's reduced all the way down.
That's a wonder that I've always had is how what is it that is not allowing that population to come back? And I don't know that. But 3 miles downstream there are enough bugs for the fish to survive on. So tailings pile slopes facing Railroad Creek are relatively stable under static conditions. However, the tailings could be released to Railroad Creek in the event of a moderate earthquake. Worst case scenario is it's springtime, the tailings are as wet as they're going to be all year round, and we have a 6-point earthquake here. The concern is, particularly on the top tailings pile, that thing will shake and some big slug of material will be ejected off the top of the pile and come down into Railroad Creek. That's the, where are we at here on time? 7:04, we got 10 minutes. To me, is that very likely to happen? No. If it does happen, is it going to be pandemonium? Yes. If it wasn't likely and the outcome was not bad, there may be some parallels here to the medical profession, but I got to think about that. If it's not a likely outcome, and if it happens, it's not a big deal, then you shouldn't spend any money on it, right? What the mining client wants all the time is to get bang for the buck. In this case, it's an unlikely event, but if the event does occur, it's going to be crazy. The picture I have in my mind is that big slug of material comes off, and it won't come off as a solid mass. Parts of it will be solid, and parts of it will flow, and there will be this big blob of stuff, partly stiff and partly goo, that will go down into the creek. The creek will pond up behind that dam. I have no belief that there's going to be water on Main Street because the pond has gotten so high. Before it gets to that point, there's going to be enough mass of water behind the dam that it's going to blow it out. So it's not we're not going to drown Lutherans with this. But once you get tailings into the creek, that's you're going to have guys to to clean that up, now you're now we're back to Exxon Valdez, where you're going to have people out there with shop vacs on their back trying to suck these tailings out from the crevices of the rock. So environmentally, it's going to be a bad thing, but not fatal, not biblical. But the cleanup would be incredibly expensive. Those tailings are fine. They're going to go everywhere. They're going to go way down the stream. It's going to be bad. So in that case, even though it's not likely, we still do something about it. That last bullet is almost irrelevant. Subsurface and subsurface soils within the maintenance yard and lagoon exceed regulatory criteria for metals and total petroleum hydrocarbons. That's the kind of stuff you find at the local gas station. That's going to take about 20 minutes and $1,000 to clean up. One sample collected at the Lucerne Bar near the mouth of Railroad Creek contains zinc at concentrations slightly above regulatory criteria. Water and sediment gets flushed down all the way down to the mouth, and one of the samples came back a little bit impacted. Planned remedial alternative components. When we talk with Paul after Vespers, he will talk about a number of alternatives, and they have been given numbers and letters because there are so darn many of them. When we did the original feasibility study, we went from alternative 1 to alternative 8, with alternative 1 being the lowest cost, lowest effort, lowest, which means we're not going to do anything, all the way through a number of alternatives that had different components. Are we going to put a bigger drainage ditch around the back edge of the tailings pile? Are we going to put the tailings back into the mine? That was one of the alternatives that we looked at. The problem with that is you can't get all the toothpaste back in the tube. Right? I know that's fairly technical that I just said, but I'm thinking you can get that. And so there's that whole sort of smorgasbord of ideas that we came up with all up through alternative 8. Feasibility study was finished bloody a long time ago, 2006, something like that. So since then, in negotiations between the parties, we've come up with these additional alternatives to now we're at alternative 13. Do you know that?
Yeah.
Is that right?
13A
something. And so once...
There are a few letters behind it.
Right, so now we've gotten to the point that we're at alternative 13, and there are sub-variants of alternative 13, alternative 13A through C or D or E or something like that, and they're all different bits and pieces. Construct larger diversion trench around tailings piles. Keep clean water clean. When you get called in next time to be a mine remediation expert, this is the most bang you can get for your buck. If you keep clean water clean, all you got to do is build a big trench. You got guys out there on backhoes for a while. They build the trench. It doesn't cost a lot to maintain. It's the best thing you can do. Keep that in mind because I may not be around here. Divert Railroad Creek. That's the expectation right now, is that we, as part of the cleanup, Railroad Creek will be diverted starting somewhere right around here. A new channel will be dug, constructed. As we get clear of the village, it will be pushed as far north as is possible. It will be brand new. It will be built. It will have new rock riffle pools. It will have trees overhanging it. The thing to do is to, in this case, start over. Create new, unimpacted, and designed Railroad Creek. Collect and divert and treat seeps and runoff in the current alignment of Railroad Creek. We'll set the new creek just a tad higher than the current creek so that the impacted water from beneath the tailings piles and a little bit of water from the new Railroad Creek will leak and all go into the current version of Railroad Creek, which will go down to Sven's Bridge or the Goat Bridge. And there will be, for you, those of you who don't know those, at the end of the three tailings piles, there's a sort of wetlands area on that side of the creek. The vision is that that will be expanded and there will be fairly low-tech, there won't be a water treatment plant down there. There will be a number of ponds where water will flow to the treatment methodology will be fairly simple as well. You put lime in the water, the lime increases the pH, the metals drop out, you create sludge that'll go back up on top of the tailings piles. The tailings piles will be regraded, that slope will be cut back so that they're more stable. I don't know whether the plan is to take tailings pile 2 material and put it on tailings piles 1 and 3, so now we have 3 equal elevation piles. I don't know what the precise outline of that is. Demolish and remove the mill building skeleton, clean out the remaining ore materials from the mill building area. When they pulled the plug, when they left here, people got out of here as quickly as they could, because the faster you get out of here, the faster you could get it to the next mine down the road where they might be looking for people. So if the next mine down the road needs 5 new people and you're the 6th person off the boat, you got to keep going. There are mining age mill materials in there. Concentrated ore is still in there. We can't get in there right now safely to get it out of there, or we would have. We'd have done it 10 years ago. So that whole skeleton's going to come down. All the source of ongoing contamination will be pulled out of there. The 2 big waste rock piles, my understanding is, will be put in the hole, and the whole thing will be covered over to match the natural slope there. This is a picture taken by me at Holden, getting paid. November 2001, from the porch of Chalet 1. Lodge 1, thank you very much. I had to get up early because we were drilling, and I came out, and that's what I had to face. So that's the end of the scheduled part of the talk. I will be glad to answer any questions if anybody wants to hang around. It's getting darn near time for Vespers, from what I think. 7:13:50. I'm a minute and 10 seconds. I still got another minute! Mine side hike tomorrow.